to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.
Simple Actions Group wishes to extend a warm welcome to all in attendance today. These premises are non-smoking. Our group is welcome to use this room and the restrooms exclusively. Newcomers, is there anyone here in your first 30 days of sobriety? We would just like to welcome you by first name. Anybody? All right, seeing none. If you're on Zoom, you can raise your virtual hand. Somebody will chat with you. At this time, please silence your cell phones. Also, we respectfully ask those present to please refrain from unnecessary moving around the room. This will keep distractions and disturbances to a minimum and allow everyone to listen uninterrupted. This group practices the spiritual foundations of anonymity, singleness of purpose, and effective sponsorship. As a group, we believe that the book Alcoholics Anonymous provides alcoholics with a set of clear directions on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of simple action. It is the purpose of this meeting to carry that clear message and to focus on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism by taking AA's simple action. The AA preamble says, Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of people who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contribution. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution, does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. So if you're not familiar with this meeting, the format, we're an open big book step study. As a group, we recognize the power of one alcoholic identifying with another alcoholic, sharing their experience, strength, and hope from the book Alcoholics Anonymous. We encourage you to engage in conversation and ask questions after the meeting pertaining to the step discussed tonight. This evening, we're doing step four, part one. We're going to devote the entire meeting to resentments. Anybody? All right. We're going to please help us welcome our panel this evening. We have Ethan and Amy. So I'm going to read basically, I'm not going to read you to death tonight, but I'm going to do a paragraph out of the big book from page 63, and then our panel will share for a few minutes. We're going to start on page 63. First, step four is made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Page 63. Next, we launched on a course of vigorous action, the first step of which is a personal house cleaning, which many of us had never attempted. Though our decision was a vital and crucial step, it could have little permanent effect unless at once followed by a strenuous effort to face and to be rid of the things in ourselves which had been blocking us. Our liquor was but a symptom, so we had to get down to causes and condition. First, we searched out the flaws in our makeup which caused our failure. Being convinced that self manifested in various ways was what had defeated us, we considered its common manifestations. Resentment is the number one offender. It destroys more alcoholics than anything else. From it stem all forms of spiritual dis-ease. For we have not only been mentally and physically ill, we have been spiritually sick. When the spiritual malady is overcome, we straighten out mentally and physically. In dealing with the resentments, we set them on paper. We listed the people, institutions, or principles with whom we were angry. We asked ourselves why we were angry. In most cases, we found that it was our self-esteem, our pocketbooks, our ambitions, our personal relationships, including sex, which were hurt or threatened. So we were sore. We were burned up. On our grudge list, we set opposite each name our injuries. Was it our self-esteem, our security, our ambitions, our personal or sex relations, which had been interfered with? Amy, would you start us up?
Yep. I'm an alcoholic. My name is Amy. My sobriety date is May 9th, 1994. My home group is this group, Simple Actions. I have a sponsor that I talk to at least two times a week, and I sponsor other women. I also have a service position. I am fully engaged with the program of recovery in Alcoholics Anonymous, and I'm very grateful for it. I say that I'm fully engaged because I cannot speak to you from a moral hilltop tonight. I am burning with a resentment, burning so much with this resentment against a coworker that I actually was thinking over the weekend I should quit my job where I just got a massive raise and a crazy massive bonus. a job where on Christmas Eve, my boss kissed me on the forehead, said, "I love you. If you ever left, I would have to close this business. There is no longer any gallery without you at the center of it." And still, I thought, because of this guy that works 30 hours a week, I'm quitting my job. I'm quitting my job because I hate him and he inconveniences me. The resentment is he challenges my authority. He's not good at his job. It affects my self-esteem. I'm a great boss. I'm a great example. I have a wonderful work ethic. My fear is I'm not any of those things. I'm not a good example of anything, probably. It affects my ambitions. I want to go to work each day and I want to experience ease and comfort. I also want to go to work each day and be recognized as the ultimate authority. I am afraid that I am not deserving of the authority that I have. It affects my pride. Others should recognize that I'm the big boss. Others should recognize that I am the person running the show. And you can see how this is going south quickly. I am afraid that I am unworthy of the responsibilities that I have. It affects my security. I believe that I need to be in charge. I believe that things need to go according to my direction in order for me to be okay. I'm afraid I don't deserve to be okay. I'm afraid of conflict. How this affects my personal relations. Professional people recognize the pecking order and they stay in line with it. It affects my sex relations. A real man knows when he's been bested by a woman. A real man knows how to concede. Of course, on any other day, I would tell you, a real man doesn't ever get put down by a woman, but that doesn't serve my purposes tonight. How it affects my pocketbook. Others should not be in a position to harm my ability to make money. So I pray for this person. I ask God to help me show this person the same patience, tolerance, and pity I would cheerfully grant a sick friend. I recognize that he is spiritually sick, spiritually developing, emotionally unevolved, just like me. So I take a look at where am I selfish? I'm selfish every day. I wake up with a script on how the day is supposed to go, what you are supposed to be doing, what I am supposed to be doing. My basic dishonesty is I do not accept reality. I am at when all the substances are out of the way, what's left is I am addicted to my own version of reality, and you better fit in with it. The other dishonesty is that if you don't fit in with it, I'm going to have to do something about it. Another dishonesty is that I do not recognize that this person is trying very hard. This person is making efforts. This person has even said to me things like, "I'm trying so hard to please you," which, I mean, that's a whole nother analysis that doesn't need to be beaten out here. But I don't recognize that this person is trying because it's not going my way. Basically, I am being inconvenienced by how this person is doing things. I'm self-seeking. I gossip about him to other employees. I have criticized him harshly to my boss. I have revealed things about him that I discovered when I was checking his references to people who had no business knowing those things. I have talked trash about him to anybody that knows me who will listen in an attempt to gain allies so that all of you will tell me that I'm in the right and it's a horrible situation. I have gone through every single detail, every word that's been said, every scenario that has been played out so that I can elicit as much sympathy and support for you from you as possible. I also have this flawed strategy that if I go through every single detail, I'm somehow exercising the demon or I'm getting it all out of my system, which is another dishonesty. All I'm doing is adding fuel to the fire. I'm buffing up my story. I'm making the story bigger and bigger and bigger. And in the story, I am the victim and he is the villain. I mean, this is just a little guy in a part-time job. And where am I afraid? I am so afraid of conflict in my happy place. I am so afraid that I've made my job my entire identity. I am afraid that I'm using my boss, who is 86 years old. He's rickety. I'm using my 86-year-old boss as an ATM and as a higher power. And if something happens that makes me look bad, I'm afraid he won't be on my side anymore. And what I'm really afraid underneath all of that is when I act like crap, that God can't possibly be on my side, that I have lost God's love when I act like crap. And it is always fear that is underneath every resentment. The hole in my soul of resentment is the exact same shape as the self-centered fear. that I'm not worthy of better treatment. I don't deserve to be at ease and comfort, that I'm not a good person, that I'm not worthy of God's love, that things will never go my way. And that ticks me over into more dishonesty because of the old beliefs and the superstitions and the flawed ideas that I have about God, that God helps those who help themselves, that God wants me to assert my authority. I mean, here's another big dishonesty. I don't really recognize anyone's authority but my own. So I'm mad at this guy because he isn't respecting my authority. I mean, it's this big twisted mix. And what I know for sure when I go through this inventory is that my troubles are of my own making. My problem is a spiritual malady. This has arisen out of me. It could be him, it could be her, it could be them, it could be anything at all, but it is never the problem out there that's really going on. It's the problem in here. It can only be worked out between me and God. This guy has had days where he's done everything right. I still don't like him. He breathes too loud. He breathes too loud. There are days when he doesn't talk at all, and I feel like he's kind of a sullen little bitch. There are days when he talks too much, and I'm like, what are you, a 13-year-old, you know, gadfly? What the heck? You can't stop chatting like a little girl. It doesn't matter what he does. He can't do anything right because my problem is me. It's not him. That's all I have to say about it.
Thanks, Amy. I'm Ethan. I'm an alcoholic. I just want to start by saying I'm grateful to be here. I'm grateful for all, like, all that. My sobriety date is May 1st, 2019. I have a sponsor that knows he's my sponsor most of the time. But no, seriously, I do have a sponsor, and he has a sponsor. It's his sponsor, and so on and so forth. I've been taken through this book by my sponsor, and I've been taken through the 12 steps of alcoholics as well. I have a home group that is this meeting as well. And I only say that not to say like this is all the things I'm doing. It's just to show that I am an active member of Alcoholics Anonymous, because when I came into Alcoholics Anonymous, I didn't know what it meant to be a real alcoholic. I didn't know what it meant to be an active member of Alcoholics Anonymous. I just thought I had a drinking problem. You know, I thought I was just, you know, like had bad luck. I was, you know, just all these things, you know, and I was really hoping that y'all were going to show me how to drink like a normal person or drink with no consequences. I was still going to get, you know, still going to get high because, you know, that wasn't my issue. And this is AA. So like, you know, alcohol is my problem. I just want to take a break. And I'm so thankful that I found the people that I found that, you know, they weren't sitting there telling me like, you have to do this, or you have to do that, but you can't be thinking this way. They just helped me go through this book. They helped me go through the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, let me decide whether or not I was a real alcoholic or not. By going through this book with me. And thankfully I did decide that I was a real alcoholic. And I'm so grateful to be able to say that today, because I have a set of clear cut directions, what I can do today. I have it designed for right out of this book and the inventory. I know so many people. I know when I came in, I looked at, heard the fourth step, heard all these horror stories about, and it was like, it made it seem so scary and so awful. But the thing is, like, these things, these resentments, these fears, they all lived in my head already. You know, I already knew all these things, you know, my God, which at the time I didn't really believe in, but, you know, my God knew all these too. And it was just like, it was just weighing me down so much. Cause just like what we just read, you know, it said our liquor was just but a symptom. We had to get down to the causes and conditions, you know, and I'm so glad that once again, like the book is telling me, like, I don't have a drinking problem. If I had a drinking problem, I could just stop drinking all my issues. But the issue is, like, I have a spiritual malady. You know, I'm selfish, I'm self-centered, I'm self-seeking. Everything has to revolve around me. And when I don't get my way, I'm upset and you're to blame, even though I don't want to look, you know? And so when I come into this program and I'm, you know, at this point, if I get to the inventory, I've probably done 1, 2, and 3, you know, but even that, like, you know, step one was difficult, you know, cause like, I couldn't see how my life is unmanageable, even though for me, powerlessness, like I couldn't stop even once I started. You know, I still couldn't stop. And that's the biggest thing, like, you know, powerless, you know, once I start, I can't stop. Once I stop, because I have a mind that's, and then step two, like my biggest thing was my sponsor, he framed it to me once I was miserable enough to be willing to go through with the rest of the steps. He framed it to me, you know, for step, can you believe that I have a high? I was like, I'm willing to, you know, because at this point I was 3 months sober and I was wanted to die all over. Just like when I came into these, the only thing I was doing, I was sitting on willing to do my fourth step because I was struggling with 2 and 3, and my sponsor framed it for me like that. And then I was like, all right. So he's like, step two's done. I'm like, all right. And then step three was like, can you just make the decision to move forward in the steps? And I was like, sure, you know, like I'm willing to make that decision because I'm miserable. And he even said, like, what's the worst that can happen? You know, if it doesn't work, you can just start drinking again. I'm like, man, like what? And just even that though, because like I was stuck on this inventory. I was stuck on 2 and 3 because I was scared of doing this inventory, you know, and even then, like I didn't recognize that. You know, but today I recognize like I was just so scared of doing that self-searching because it talked about it, you know, like it talked about, you know, right there, that first sentence. Next, we launched out onto a course of vigorous action, the first step of which is a personal house cleaning, which many of us never attempted. You know, I was so fearful to get down to the causes and conditions, you know, but the beautiful thing is once I did, you know, and I was able to look at my part, I realized like these resentments I hold towards people, they have nothing to really even do with like what they did to me, you know, or even what it affects. Like it all had to do my character, you know. And the beautiful thing is like there's more steps for that, you know. Once I do this inventory, I have more directions to do to carry on and keep on walking this way of life. And I'm so grateful for that because I don't know where I would be without taking this personally. And I mean, definitely if like you're new or you're struggling, it seems scary, like I said, everything's already, for me, it was already killing me. So what's the worst that could happen if I just put it on paper and talk to them? Thanks.
Thank you both. We're off to a roaring start. We're going to continue on page 65. We went back through our lives. Nothing counted but thoroughness and honesty. When we were finished, we considered it carefully. The first thing apparent was that this world and its people were often quite wrong. To conclude that others were wrong was as far as most of us ever got. The usual outcome was that people continued to wrong us and we stayed sore. Sometimes it was remorse, and then we were sore at ourselves. But the more we fought and tried to have our own way, the worse matters got. As in war, the victor only seemed to win. Our moments of triumph were short-lived. And then on page 66, it continues, it is plain that a life which includes deep resentment leads only to futility and unhappiness. To the precise extent that we permit these, do we squander the hours that might have been worthwhile? But with the alcoholic, whose hope is the maintenance and growth of a spiritual experience, this business of resentment is infinitely grave. We found that it is fatal. For when harboring such feelings, we shut ourselves off from the sunlight of the spirit. The insanity of alcohol returns, and we drink again. And with us, to drink is to die. Amy.
Well, I've made myself very miserable with this resentment. My remorse is horrible. And my pride and ego are engaged because I think I shouldn't feel this way. I think I should be doing better than this. The truth is I'm as powerless over my resentments and my fears as I am over alcohol. If I could make myself think differently, I certainly would. The only thing that can help me is the spiritual experience. I need to have a spiritual experience. I hope that I'm going to have one tonight because I got to go to work tomorrow and make an amends to this guy for some really nasty stuff I said to him on Friday. I'm working with a brain that cannot differentiate the true from the false, a brain that has strange mental blank spots, a brain that experiences a mental twist. And once my pride is engaged, I definitely can't tell the true from the false because all that's going on for me is I got to prove that you're wrong and I'm right. Even though being right is a dead end, we could maybe all agree that this guy's got some issues, but where does that get me? I still have to work with him. I still have to be with him every day. I have other than really surrendering an inventory. I've done a lot of inventory on this. I think probably just to get some relief. As opposed to a cure, an absolute surrender, because there's a part of me that wants to hang on to my self-righteousness because he really is a pain in my butt. And what I have done, this is the work that I've done. I have printed out all the characteristics of PTSD, which he says he has, and I have copied them to everyone in the building. So they all know that I'm dealing with somebody who's emotionally volatile and they should be feeling sorry for me. I have also diagnosed him as having narcissistic personality disorder. I've also circulated the characteristics of that, as well as Napoleon syndrome, because he's a few inches shorter than I am. And I'm absolutely sure that's why he challenges authority. I've really done all this. I really have 28 years sober. That's exactly what I've done. That's what I've done. And it has beaten me down to my knees. And you know what else it's done? No one in the building feels sorry for me that I'm having to deal with this, but everybody feels very sorry for him because I'm on his case. Everyone feels bad for poor little so-and-so. No one feels sorry for big bad Amy. In fact, anything he's done wrong is completely obscured by the fact that I am rabidly going after him like a jackal. That's all that anybody notices now, that I am losing my mind. And this is just an hourly wage, 30 hours a week person who just can't make me happy. I don't even like the way he parts his hair. I can get wound up with that. The word resentment means re-feeling, feeling it over and over again. I've sponsored people before that were of a certain religious background who said, you know, I don't have resentments. That's not how God wants me to be. I live in forgiveness. And so I say, you know, look around the word then. You know, it's not necessarily being angry. It can be disappointed. It can be frustrated. I'm all of those things. I'm disappointed that this guy isn't following my script. I'm frustrated that I have to work harder. Not at all am I considering that I have some relationship ideals. And in the workplace, they include being calm, detached, and professional, which I have been none of those things. And a relationship ideal that goes for every sort of relationship is, how can I be of service to this person? Not once have I thought about what I can do for him. All I've thought about is what he is not doing for me. And the only reason someone like me is willing to give up my ideas is because they don't work. If this was working out for me, I'd be in here riding on, you know, a blazing comet of self-righteousness and hellfire. I would have ground him underfoot and I'd feel great about it. It just doesn't work that way. In this fellowship, I have become acquainted with my conscience. I cannot screw people over anymore. I no longer believe that the world is a hostile place and that I need to eat or be eaten, that I got to get out there and get while the getting's good. I can't live that way anymore. If I could, I would, but this is keeping me up at night. I felt a little itch behind my ear on the way over here. I swear, I think I could have pissed myself off into eczema. Like, I think I might have a skin problem now because I'm so mad at this guy. So my ideas don't work. The God idea does. And it does over and over again. This is the same God who 2 weeks ago, I asked my boss for a certain raise. He was going to give me half. He ended up giving me twice what I asked for and then ended up giving me a bonus five times the amount that I asked for, which was an insane thing because we started the entire negotiation with, well, you know, we're about to go into recession. Stock market's way down. I'm very concerned. I ended up with five times the amount of money that I asked for. It's also the same God that has restored my eyes. The last time I was speaking, I couldn't see anybody. I've been wearing glasses since I was 3 years old. I have not been able to wear a contact lens in my left eye for almost 20 years. My eye doctor told me it can't even be corrected. This God, the God of my understanding, a week ago, got me to a specialist who fit these crazy things in my eyes. I'm 2020 and 2025. I haven't been that since I was 3 years old. I'm 55 years old. And so this guy who doesn't part his hair in a way that makes me comfortable, it's like really like he's got to have a razor or a ruler in there. And I just, you know, I make up a story about that. That's a tight ass. That's a person with a real control problem. I'm going to have to grind him down. I'm going to have to bend him to my will because of his part. So I'm thinking that God, who gave me this vision, who has brought me more than I deserve, certainly material, that God can't change my heart so that I can walk in to the place that I love and look at a person that I have been charged to serve as a way of life. It's all through the book. We're going to work this out on an altruistic as well as a spiritual plane. My first thought must be of others and how I may best help their needs. If I stick close to him and perform his work well, I will be able to meet calamity. He will enable me to meet calamity with serenity. Over and over and over again, Amy, put your first thought of others. I have not done that at all. And the price that I'm paying, I mean, eczema, who knows? I could end up with an ulcer next. It's just not worth it. I don't like to surrender when I don't know what the end of the story is going to be. But if I cut myself off from knowing what the mystery is, I'm cutting myself off from God. I don't know what God will do with me in this situation. I imagine that it will be some horrible, you know, exchange, and I'm just going to end up firing him anyway, and I will have failed. But the God of my understanding, I shouldn't be sober. I should be stoned right now, sucking on a candy cane somewhere. I don't know. Not a candy cane. I was saying that metaphorically. But anyway, I should be in all kinds of trouble. I am not the kind of person who knows how to stay out of trouble. But the God of my understanding keeps lifting me above my humanity and my alcoholism when I just surrender. That's all.
Thanks, Ian.
I think for what I loved about, just once again, there was nothing counted but thoroughness and honesty. When we finished, we considered it carefully. The first thing apparent was that the world and its people were often quite wrong. To conclude that others were wrong was as far as we, most of us ever got. Like, I just love that. Once again, like, all I need is just thoroughness and honesty. Because once again, like, and I've found this to be true, like, just last year, you know, like, I was struggling with a lot of stuff, and I had a lot of deep-seated resentments going on with people that I said that I loved, you know, and looking back today, like, yes, I do still care about them, and I did love them, but I had so much resentment, you know, and it wasn't just anger, and I love what Amy was saying, like, resentment doesn't always have to be feelings that I replay over and over and over again in my head until I'm just consumed. And like what the book talks about, like, I'm cut off from the sunlight of the spirit. I'm cut off from whatever the hell I choose to call God, you know, whatever the hell I choose to call my higher power. But when I have these deep seated resentments, like, I'm cut off from it. But I love this book only because it tells me, like, thoroughness and honesty. Like, that's the only thing that counted. And it kind of, for me, I read it as it's kind of like gaslighting. It was apparent that, you know, the world and people were often wrong, you know. But then it goes right into saying, like, but the thing is, like, I never look at it myself. That's as far as I ever go. And just like what was, you know, just talking about, you know, as in war, the victor only seemed our moments of triumph were short, you know, talking about for when harboring such feelings, we shut off ourselves, insanity, alcohol, and with us to drink is to die. And that was one thing when I did my inventory, like, that was what pushed me to want to move forward in the steps, you know, because it wasn't even like I had all these horrible resentments towards other people, but I did have that remorse that it was talking about. You know, I did feel just so shitty. I was putting myself down, you know, 3 months sober. And the beautiful thing is, sitting in these rooms reading this book, like, I banged it in my head that to drink is to die, but I had all these feelings and all these things I kept on replaying over and over again. Like I said, it wasn't even anger. And all I wanted to do, I just wanted to die. Once again, 3 months sober, you know, feeling exactly how I felt when I was. And it's so fucked up because, like, I want to die because I can't drink anymore. I'm so miserable. So now I want to drink because I want to die. But I know if I drink, I'm going to die. And I'm just like, I'm so caught up in all these, talk about another resentment. You know, I'm like, just caught up in all these feelings. And thankfully, once I put all this stuff on paper, it wasn't like I was just magically, you know, like, cured or all this stuff just went away. But I was able to see how much energy and how much just time I put into all these feelings and all these resentments that, you know, once I started making these amends, like, I realized, like, these feelings I had towards these people, you know, whether they're good or bad, most of the times they didn't even remember any of the shit I was thinking about. You know, it was all like this narrative I created in my head. You know, and it's not to, like, invalidate my feelings or anything, but it just shows, like, how selfish, still only thinking about myself, still, you know, like, woe is me, all these resentments, you know, all this or that. But the biggest thing is, like, when I come into this program and I recognize, you know, like, once again, like, what was just read, like, you know, like, alcohol is but a symptom. You know, I'm spiritually sick, and the only way that I can, you know, have these spiritual experiences is through taking these steps and clearing these resentments, because these resentments are the, you know, biggest things that will block me. Because, you know, when I have these resentments, once again, the only thing I'm thinking about is me or whatever the fuck hurt me, you know, and I'm not thinking about others. And from taking these steps, I found that, you know, when I need to turn my attention, you know, that's the only way I can stay connected to my God. Because, like I said, this time last year, I wanted to die all over again. I didn't want to drink just yet, but I wanted to die because I had all these deep-seated resentments, you know, and I was, you know, that honesty. I was lying to my sponsor. I was lying to my therapist. I wasn't, you know, every time I talked to somebody, he's like, everything's okay. you know, but I'm sitting outside my apartment, you know, wishing that, like, I don't want to go inside, waking up every single morning, like, man, I wish I just didn't wake up, you know, because I have all these deep-seated resentments I'm not talking to anybody about, you know. And once again, the only person that I was really lying to was myself, you know, because I was the only person I was really hurting, you know. And then it all came to a head and things got weird, you know. But it's, I don't want to say it's funny, it's just, it's amazing that it's, this program is so simple, because once I finally did an inventory, I was able to look at these things. I was like, oh, like, you know, I was wrong. You know, I was wrong for all these things. And this is why. It wasn't that I was wrong. It was like, there was these character defects. There's these fears coming up. And now when, like I said, you know, a minute ago, like now when I move forward with the steps, I have other steps there to help me work on those, not even work on those character defects, but identify them so I can turn them over to my God. You know, and then start carrying the message and start being of service to others. And that's all I got. Thanks for that.
Thank you both. That's great. All right, we're going to continue on page 66. We turn back to the list where it held the key to the future. We were prepared to look at it from an entirely different angle. We began to see that the world and its people really dominated us. In that state, the wrongdoing of others, fancied or real, had the power to actually kill. How could we escape? We saw that these resentments must be mastered, but how? We could not wish them away any more than alcohol. This was our course. We realized that the people who wronged us were perhaps spiritually sick. Though we did not like their symptoms and the way they disturbed us, they, like ourselves, were sick too. We asked God to help us show them the same patience, the same tolerance, pity, and patience that we would cheerfully grant a sick friend. When a person offended, we said to ourselves, this is a sick man. How can I be helpful to him? God save me from being angry. Thy will be done. We avoid retaliation or argument. We wouldn't treat sick people that way. If we do, we destroy our chance of being helpful. We cannot be helpful to all people, but at least God will show us how to take a kindly and tolerant view of each and every one.
This section, for me, comprises something that I think of as the turnaround. So I think to myself, has there ever been a situation where I have treated this person or anyone else the way that I am being treated? Where has this showed up before? I have a million examples of times that I thought I was a great employee. I was a great sponsor. I was a great sponsee. I was a great home group member. I was a great AA. I was great at whatever. And I was terrible. I've had to go back to sponsees that I sponsored and said I was utterly full of crap. I had no idea what I was doing. If you want to give me another chance, I'll be happy to take you through the book. I have. I've had to go to home group meetings and say, you know, I mouthed off. And I realized that I was promoting and certainly not attracting. And if there's anyone that needs to talk to me about how I've affected them, I'm open for you to come to me. I believed I was a great home group member. This is like 20 years ago. My home group did not have the money to stay where they were. And so I, with a beautiful illustration of big shotism, said, I'll pay the rent every month. Now, today I would never say that. I have an understanding of the seventh tradition. But back then, I thought I was being a great AA. So isn't it possible that this guy who constantly says, anything you need, just let me know. Well, I'm not asking him to do anything. He doesn't even water the plants right. I'm not entrusting him with anything else. He's even been in with socks that don't match. I am not trusting him with anything at all. But truly, haven't I thought that I was doing a great job before and I was doing something terrible? Many times over and over, I was in the blind spot of my own ego. And I couldn't see that I was not living up to any kind of spiritual principles or moral or philosophical convictions because I didn't have the power to do it. But in my head, I was doing it. I was being a good friend. I actually, now that I'm talking about this, I just volunteered somebody during our home group member to do something else. I just volunteered another person who wasn't even here. And I think I'm a good home group member. I also think I'm this person's great friend. I just volunteered her to do something. I am flawed. I show up flawed. I show up spiritually sick every single day. It doesn't mean that I am a wholesale failure. It means that I'm human, that it's uneven. I have to consistently recover every day. I have a friend who tells me, live every day like it's day one. Work this like your hair's on fire, because you wake up every morning unrecovered. You wake up every morning with untreated alcoholism. So I've behaved poorly toward this guy, and I'm going to make an amends. And what is coming into view for me is that he absolutely has done the best that he could do. And he may have some other issues. And shouldn't I treat him with tolerance, pity, and patience? Wouldn't I want someone to treat me that way if I were suffering and I was struggling? And here's the thing. On the very first day, he said to me, I've got PTSD and I'm going to have a lot of doctor's appointments and a lot of therapy appointments. Now, if that really was going to be an issue, I could have said that's probably not going to work for us. But here's another thing about me. I assign myself lots of roles. And in that moment, the role I assigned myself was the greatest psychotherapist that ever lived. I had to look up PTSD, but I'm the greatest psychotherapist that ever lived. And when I heard that, I thought, well, I'll fix him. And I couldn't fix him because my ideas don't work. I made it worse and worse. And when I couldn't fix him and he continued being who he was, I got madder and madder. And then I started to retaliate. And now I'm in a position where I have to make an amends because I mouthed off in an ugly way. And this is another way that I can see my dishonesty, is that I think I'm being a nice person by not saying all along, this is a problem for me. This really isn't working for me. Or do you think we could handle this a different way? I keep my mouth shut because I think I'm being nice, trying to be nice. So I comply, I comply, I comply, I stay quiet, stay quiet, stay quiet. And then shabam, a nuclear bomb goes off. It's apocalyptic. When I say stuff like, well, it's just, I'm sure everybody that knows me here has heard me mouth off in a really bad way. So I put myself in that position. I'd like to tell you this guy put me in that position, but no, I did. With my addiction to my own version of reality, I can fix his PTSD. I can run this gallery. I can make everyone happy. I can comply. I can be the nice, quiet person that I would like to believe I'm supposed to be. That's not who I am at all. Maybe God made me to be that, but that has yet to be revealed. So pretending is really of no use whatsoever. Because the day is going to come when I blow, which I did. So this turnaround gives me a little spiritual insight into, wasn't I doing the absolute best that I could at a certain point? And now I look back on it and realize that was pretty bad, pretty pathetic. Isn't it possible that this person thinks he's being a great, and he does think he's being a great employee. He does. He was shocked that he had a 90-day review. He really thinks he's being a great employee. So why can't I just fit in with that? Why can't I be of service to that? Because I'm a heat-seeking missile for ease and comfort. I want him to make my life easier, which is exactly what this book, page after page, tells me is not going to work. Me first is never going to work out for me, because at that rate, I will always be in conflict with everyone else around me. That's it.
So, I mean, I guess once again, like just going right back to the return back to the list where it held the key to the future. We were prepared to look at it from a different entirely. We began to see that the world and the wrongdoing of others, fantasized or real, fancy to real, had the power to actually, like, for me, that's just so powerful once again. Cause like for the longest time, I mean, just like what I was just talking about, like I've got all these resentments, all these things, you know, that are basically just centered in self. You know, and I'm looking at them and I'm angry at all these people, you know, for treating me this way or whatever it was, or doing this or that. And then once I write this inventory down, I look at these things, it's like, man, like I'm really giving these people a lot of control, you know. And before I came into this program, you know, like that was my biggest thing was control. You know, I wanted to control every aspect of my life. But when I look at these, I look at these resentments, I realize like, for the longest time, I was letting so many feelings, I was letting so many people just control how I reacted or acted towards them. And it was almost never in a kind way. So once again, like just like what we just read a couple minutes ago, of course, these things are going to look really shitty. And of course, I'm going to have remorse. I'm going to want to drink over, you know, the act that last little bit, you know, had power to actually kill. You know, once again, for me, it's so true, because all these things are going to do is just turn me, you know, these resentments, whether they're resentments or anger, like those are the two things that push me, you know. And if I'm not willing to put them on paper and I'm not willing to talk about them, you know, I'm headed for trouble. I'm going to drink, you know. It might not be today, it might not be in a couple months, but after a while, like for me, because what like what Amy was saying, like I'm like a glutton for ease and comfort. That's the only thing I'm seeking constantly, is ease and comfort. So if I'm living in these resentments, I'm blocked from my God. There's absolutely, you know, there's just all this shit going on in my head that's telling me I'm a piece of shit, or I'm not, you know, that person's horrible for this reason, you know, and it's going to kill me eventually. And I love, and once again, like, I can't, how am I going to turn my attention towards others? How am I going to try to practice these principles, you know, if I'm holding these resentments towards people? Because I'm not going to, unless I am willing to look at it from an entirely different perspective, I'm not going to want to look at them as a sick person. Especially these people I hold resentments towards. That's the last thing I want to do. Because once again, like, fuck them, or, you know, because they're doing this, or, you know, this or that, because I have all these feelings, all this anger towards them. But where does that get me? It just gets me right back to the bottom, drinking myself to, you know. And even if I'm not drinking myself to death, it gets me inside Alcoholics Anonymous, trying to practice these principles, wanting to die all over again, because I'm harboring resentment I talk about. And since I don't want to talk about these resentments, I definitely don't want to look at these people I hold resentments towards, you know, as a sick person. You know, that's the last thing on my mind. Cause once again, I'm just like in this, like, I'm in this point of self-pity, you know, and I want everyone to pity me. And I love that very last, you know, we cannot be helpful to all people, but at least God will show us how to take a kindly and tolerant view of each and every. Because that's something that I have to remember too. You know, I'm not going to always be able to be of maximum usefulness to everybody. I'm not going to be able to, you know, save everybody. And that's like, I wouldn't want that responsibility anyways, you know, but I can still show up for, you know, if I clear these resentments, you know, and I talk about them and I put them on paper and I talk to my sponsor about them, you know, and then I ask God to remove them. And then I start, you know, asking God how I can be of service to the people around me and to my God, you know, I can start, you know, maybe playing around, trying to control. I can just show up, you know, even in my own life, and show up to just show up, you know, and I can just do the next right thing, where that was the last thing I wanted to do before this, you know, before I did this inventory, before I, you know, even just like a few months ago after doing another inventory, that was kind of still the last thing I wanted to do. You know, I knew what I needed to do. I knew I needed to come back into AA and, like, you know, get back into the book. But I still, like, had all these things blocking me. I had all these resentments blocking me. You know, then once I looked at them, it wasn't even all these resentments. It was like two resentments. One of them was over somebody I didn't even know. You know, it was just this idea of a person, you know, in this situation. But once again, like, I was able to look at, what does that really affect, you know, and what does it affect within me? You know, and a lot of it was, you know, we're going to get into it, you know, self-esteem, you know, all these things, all these character, you know, and of course, that when I have these things going on in my head, the last thing I want to do is turn my attention to, you know, but once I was able to put all these things, you know, I was willing to then start, you know, moving forward, you know, and trying to, you know, for the still sick and suffering alcoholic, or even just practicing these principles on my affairs. So showing up for my family, or showing up for my coworkers, or for my boss, you know, just not being a total just shithead, you know. Because that can be hard for me sometimes as well, especially with work, you know. I just love this book so much. Thanks.
Thank you. All right, we got about 8 minutes left, and our final paragraph is on page 67, the mysterious fourth column. Referring to our list again, putting out of our minds the wrongs others had done, we resolutely looked for our own mistakes. Where had we been selfish, dishonest, self-seeking, and frightened? Though a situation had not been entirely our fault, we tried to disregard the other person involved entirely. Where were we to blame? The inventory was ours, not the other man's. We saw our faults, we listed, we placed them before us in black and white. We admitted our wrongs honestly and were willing to set these matters straight.
So what I've done is I have gossiped, I have criticized, I have shunned. I have pulled the peanut gallery. I have hung on to my self-righteousness. I have prayed, like, just not normal perseverance, but just like on him. I mean, if he even looks in the wrong direction, I'm instantly aware of it. I have made it my business to find everything that's wrong. And just like that story in the back of the book that everybody reads for acceptance, but it talks about the magic magnifying glasses. When I have those glasses turned around and I'm looking for what's wrong, I see it everywhere. But when I turn those glasses around and I'm looking for what's right, I'm looking for what's good, I see that everywhere. And somewhere along the line in the process of me looking for what's good, I realize that when I'm looking for what's good, what I'm really looking for is God. And God is everywhere. God does not have favorites. God does not have grandchildren. This person is a child who is loved just like I am. I am not better than he is. I don't have to prove that I'm better than he is. That's all just ego machination. I have wasted a lot of time. Well, I'm not going to say it's a waste because I'm learning something that perhaps I could not have learned any other way. That my job is not my identity. My job is not my power. My boss is not my higher power. The people that I work with are the people that I work with. They're not my God squad. They're not my support network. They don't have to live the same way that I do. They don't have to work the same way that I do. I am the one that works and lives this way of life because the other way of life that I had before did not work out for me. I am at fault here. I have not lived the way that I know that I need to live in order for me to be okay. I'm not okay with a head full of steam. I'm just not. Anger is definitely a dubious luxury. I cannot walk around thinking about all of you as being against me. I cannot walk around thinking of myself as the center of the universe and you're all satellites around me, either making my life great or making my life horrible. And I mean, I do look at you and think that it's your job to make my life great, which doesn't work out for me either. The only thing that works out for me is when I see that the God of my understanding is at the center and I am one of an infinite number of satellites in orbit around, no more important than the next orbit over. This guy is just one orbit over from me. Thanks for listening to me. I'm going to be able to make my amends tomorrow. That's all.
Thank you, Amy.
I think talk about something that I've never been willing to do, you know, in the past until I did this. Looked at my own mistakes, you know, looked at where I'd been wrong, you know, totally ignoring, you know, the other person, what they'd done. Because why would I want to do that? You know, I would never want to do that because, you know, like I'm right, they're wrong. This is why they're wrong. This is why I'm right. You know, they hurt me. But once again, where did that get me? That just got me right back into this, got me wanting to drink, wanting to, you know, die. You know, it even got, like I said, it even got me as well too. So when I do this inventory and do this last column and I'm able to like look at my part and I'm able to list like what was my part? You know, where had I been selfish, dishonest, self-seeking, or frightened, you know, that talk about something that just gives me so much more light, you know, offers me so much more perspective to see like, yes, I did have a role to play in this. I guess this wasn't just all someone just throwing shit at me, you know, doing all these things like, and I can somewhat, for me, like I can look at it and be like, yeah, I guess I'd probably react the same way too if someone did that to me. You know, and I guess, yeah, like I just, this book, you know, I just love the fact that it gives me clear-cut directions, you know, step by step, exactly how to do it, exactly how to, especially in this inventory, you know, because this is where, just like what it said, like this is the key to my future because I'm able to see, you know, how detrimental these resentments are. And then I'm able to see, you know, like why I had these, how I have these resentments. I'm able to see, you know, what's in effect. And then at the very end, I'm able to see what was, you know, and then it sets me up to be willing to do those, to do the next few steps and admit where I was wrong and try to make these wrongs right so that I don't have to limit, so that I can be opened up to something greater than me and have these spiritual experiences that the book talks about. And I'm so grateful for that. And that's all I got.
Thanks, Ethan.
Thank you both very much. Could I prevail on you on the chair to your right? There's some baskets. If you could get those circulating for the seventh tradition, please. The seventh tradition, we've got a little Venmo PayPal cards in there if you're hip to that. Seven Tradition states that every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. While contributions cover each group's rent and other expenses, the Seven Tradition is essential at every level of AA service. It's both a privilege and a responsibility for groups and members to ensure that not only their group, but also their intergroup, central office, local services, district area, and general service office remain self-supporting. This keeps AA free of outside influences that might divert us from our primary purpose to help the alcoholic who still suffers. Our common welfare, a word about safety. Our group endeavors to provide a safe meeting place for all attendees and encourages each person here to contribute to fostering a secure and welcoming environment in which our meeting can take place. Announcements. Are there any announcements for the good of AA? Brother Ed. Oceanfront Conference. Thank you, sir. Larry.
Hey, Larry.
Friday. This Friday.
Thank you, Larry. Any other announcements for the good of AA? Thanks, Bo. I'm going to go to Candlelight on Friday. That sounds like fun. Let's see. Simple Actions is a home group. If you're interested in joining our home group or in need of a sponsor, please hang out after the meeting. Home group members, please raise your hands. Point out that literature is available. Please see any home group member after the meeting. Sponsorship. Sponsorship in Alcoholics Anonymous is yours for the asking. We urge you, do not delay. If you have questions or would like additional information about sponsorship, we will be available here. After we close the meeting, please feel free to talk to any one of us, or if you're shy, you can send an email to info@simpleactions.net. Reminder, smokers, please use butt can provided outside and stay well away from the church doors. All meeting audio recordings and upcoming events are posted on our website, simpleactions.net. All are invited and encouraged to join us for fellowship at the meeting after the meeting that will be held at Plaza del Sol, 22nd and Colonial. Can we thank the panel one more time, please? I'd like to thank everyone who set up and participated after the Lord's Prayer. Everyone is invited to, words are hard. After the Lord's Prayer, everyone will have a chance to come say thank you to Ethan. And I have a volunteer for the last two paragraphs on page 164, please.
You realize you're obviously to it, great fact. Abandon yourself to clear away. Give freely of what you shall be. May God bless.
Thanks for
thank you, Gordon. We got enough people, you think, to circle up around this table here?
Our Father,
who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not to temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, the power and the glory forever. Amen.
Amen. Woo-hoo.